Cook Islanders came with flowers behind their ears, ukuleles on their backs, and great grins for everyone. Stocky bougainvillians, white teeth flashing in gleaming black faces. French Polynesians, bejeweled and soigné. Staccato-voiced New Guinea Highlanders with red betel-nut gashes for mouths. Lanky Fijians in grey Sulus and polished sandals. Stolid, slow-moving Tongans. And quiet Micronesians with that self-sufficient air of people from remote places. And then came the big boys, known as the Metropolitans. They provided the SPC's money, and after they'd listened to the little fellows, they'd decide how to spend it. The British, led by a senior civil servant, wanted to do their best for their former or soon-to-be-former colonies, but gave the impression they'd rather be in Europe, where their future now lay. The French, on the other hand, moved around Noumea as though they owned the place, which, of course, they thought they did, and still do. Tanned and elegant, they still seemed wary that the English speakers were plotting to do France down. Heading the US delegation was a retired state governor who made anti-colonial speeches and no reference at all to US military presence in Guam, Samoa, Kwajalein and the like. The Australians were confident they were doing the right thing in their huge colony of Papua New Guinea and everywhere else. And the New Zealanders, well, it was hard to imagine anyone less metropolitan than the four Kiwis who wandered in, said g'day to everyone, and kia ora to a few, this was the 1970s, remember, and then sat back to see what would happen. A lot of what happened was political. Over morning tea and evening beer, the chat was about elections and what governments were up to, who was in and who was out. But at conference sessions, anything remotely political was out of order. The French were very hot on this, because although the colonies of Britain, New Zealand and Australia were on the way to self-government, or already there, France still controlled New Caledonia and French Polynesia, and feared that delegates from those islands might be infected by talk of independence or similar disgusting ideas. And France's atmospheric nuclear tests were being challenged in the World Court and by protest ships sailing towards Mururoa. To any mention of such matters, or anything even vaguely political, the French said, "No," which meant a bit of a dull ride for me, preparing programmes to send to Pacific radio stations. All reporters and listeners know a bit of political argy-bargy makes much livelier radio than statistics on copra or livestock improvement. But when I switched on my recorder at the start of the conference, such yawn-inducing stuff was all I expected. First, of course, came the opening prayer, and then the round robin, delegates listing their country's problems. The New Hebrides wanted more work on the coconut-attacking rhinoceros beetle. Better inter-island shipping, said Fiji. Others asked for help with English teaching, malaria, TB control, and so on. And then came Western Samoa. We need help to build factories for light industry. And we worry about pollution. Some fish we catch have mercury in them. And we ask SPC to fund monitoring of the atmosphere. Some fidgeting by the French delegates. The Samoan, he carried the title Tulafale, talking chief, so he knew what he was doing, swept his arm around the table. We in Samoa are concerned. And other Pacific friends, he looked at Jean de la Tour, the delegate from French Polynesia, must be too. We need reliable information about harmful material which might be carried across our ocean as a result of any experiments. It was too much for France's Monsieur Rocher, who pressed his buzzer, Monsieur le Président, and rattled on about a point of order in fast French and high dudgeon. The chairman, fingers thoughtfully together, said pollution was a problem. Conference should hear about it. Monsieur Rocher grabbed his papers, summoned his delegation and stomped out. "Time for lunch," said the chair. A couple of hours later, refreshed by a swim in the Baie des Citrons, an excellent coquillage lunch at the Lantana, and a short siesta, Monsieur Rocher and his party sat down for the afternoon session, all smiles and bonhomie. The Pacific Islanders didn't use their oratory just to expose heavy-handed censorship. Often they spoke movingly about changes in their small nations. Cook Islands Premier Albert Henry, at the time Sir Albert, could be spellbinding. I'll never forget his speech after Rarotonga's airport had been extended so jumbo jets could bring thousands of tourists into the Cook Islands. In a funny and wistful mix of history and fact and fable, he praised the builders of the airport, welcomed the wealth it would bring, lamented the end of his country's remote innocence, and asked for God's help, and told us with a chuckle that everything would be all right as long as Cook Islanders kept on voting for him. Ironically, when he later used the airport and public money to fly in people who'd promised to vote for him, his knighthood was taken away. A regular at Noumea conferences, Albert built up a certain manner as a Pacific statesman. Coming down the Lantana Hotel staircase to dinner dressed in black tie and white tuxedo, he'd greet the entire dining room with courtly nods and waves. "It's expected," he told me. "I'm the only premier at conference, so I always stay in number 10. And," he grinned, "I've an arrangement with the management. I play the part, they knock 100 francs off the bill." Towards midnight, you could usually find him by the pool or on the beach, jacket off, tie undone, half bottle of beer beside him, leading the fifth chorus of "Pearly Shells from the Ocean," and so on and on and on. Next morning, he'd be waving his finger at the conference, urging more support for his Tahitian neighbours, or persuading money out of the Americans. Albert's roguish Polynesian charm usually provided me with what they'd call nowadays good sound bites, but I was also quick to press the red record button when Walter Leany from the New Hebrides or Bougainville's John Momus spoke. Both were Melanesian priests leading their people towards independence. Sombre-voiced Father John Momus explained with seminary-trained lucidity how foreigners had drawn lines on the map, chopping his island off from its natural family, the Solomons, clipping it on to New Guinea, and then Britain had given it to Germany, and then it was taken by Australia. Through all this, Bougainvillians had never been consulted, but now their voice, no, their voices, were being heard. Some wanted to stay with Papua New Guinea. Others were ready to fight for independence. So priest-politician John Momus had to be a peacemaker. If he failed, civil war would tear his island apart. Another colonial mess had been inherited by Anglican priest Walter Leany, leader of the New Hebrides Vanuatu Party. In 1906, Britain and France declared his country a condominium with separate French and British schools, hospitals, police forces, administration, etc., etc. This daft system, labelled the pandemonium, lasted for 70 years. And now Walter Leany and his colleagues, of whom maybe half a dozen had had anything more than primary schooling, had to overcome those divisions and pull the people of 80 islands speaking 110 languages into a new nation, Vanuatu. Father Walter could blaze with passion, talking about his people's needs for, well, just about everything, from school books to piped water to immunisation. But he also made us laugh about the comic opera negotiations with the fussy French and the balmy Brits, who couldn't agree on the length of a piece of string. In the event, Vanuatu and Bougainville and Fiji, Tonga and Solomon Islands have all had to endure post-colonial explosions of fear and anger. Nowadays, when I hear yet another report from our region about bullying soldiers, street fighting and mayhem, I think of Francis, Walter, Albert, John, and other Pacific leaders who worked to try to give their countries a good start. So few successes, and so many failures, it can be depressing. Until I recall another good soundbite I recorded from Ron Crocombe, wise Pacific writer and talker. The tape must have rotted away years ago, but the gist was, over centuries, Pacific people have been exploited, baptized, educated, abducted, and invaded. Their islands have been carved up by explorers, governments, adventurers, missionaries, and traders. In their ocean, foreigners have fought wars, stolen fish, dumped rubbish, sunk ships, tested bombs. They've adjusted to steamships, the Bible, racism, religious prejudice, colonialism, jumbo jets, the World Bank, and thousands of visitors who think they know best. Despite that, proud and distinctive cultures thrive across Melanesia, Polynesia, and Micronesia, and Pacific Islanders are finding ways to put colonialism behind them and rebuild their countries. We must just help them get on with it. Those words still hearten me. I hope he's right.